Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Jamie Bologna. Okay, when I say Italy, what comes to mind? For me, or if you've been there, maybe it's old stucco buildings and cobblestone streets crowded with Vespas and old Fiats and the warm waters of the coast and the beautiful mountaintop vistas. And of course, the food. But Italian food writ large is more than just pizza and pasta with marinara sauce and chicken parm, although I do love me a good chicken parm. It's a tapestry of 20 unique regions, each with their own characters and dishes. And now National Geographic and America's Test Kitchen has journeyed through the old country and brings us their latest cookbook. It's called Tasting Italy, A Culinary Journey, some 100 classic and surprising recipes from all over Italy. And with me in studio now is Jack Bishop. He's the Chief Creative Officer of America's Test Kitchen and one of the authors of this stunning new cookbook. Jack, welcome to Radio Boston.
Thanks, Jamie. Great to be here.
So we got food in front of us, and we're going to talk about it in a second. But you and your coworkers, what have you done with this book? It is stunning. It's like food porn at its greatest.
Yeah, it started about 3 years ago, a conversation with folks at National Geographic and my colleagues at America's Test Kitchen about, wow, like, we do the same thing, but we do it in a really different way, and that we talk about places and bring them to life. And America's Test Kitchen, it's recipes and beautiful recipe food photography. And at National Geographic, it's maps, it's essays by travel writers, and of course, it's stunning location photography. And we said, well, wouldn't that be a really interesting way of telling the story of Italy? Because as far as I'm concerned, Italy is all about the food, the food, and then the
none of the other things.
All right. The art's good.
Yeah.
All right, okay. You know, there's
music,
architecture, and all right. You
history,
know, all right. And there's clothes.
You know. Yeah. Legal system. Okay.
But the food.
But the food. You're right. The food wins.
This would be a really great way of telling the complete story in the way of that you couldn't really do in just a sort of standard cookbook, or the way you really couldn't do in a travel essay, and to marry those things so that you could spend hours drooling over photographs, reading, learning things that you never knew, and then you could sort of bring it to life by walking into the kitchen and making recipes.
Yeah. Well, in this book, the pictures, the food, Italy jumps off the pages. And you're actually our first introduction. The first part of the book is a foreword written by you, and you start with your grandmother, Catherine. Can you tell me about her?
Yeah, so my maternal grandmother, her name was Catherine Pizzarello. She was born in New York, but her parents were born in Calabria, down in the south. And she's the greatest home cook in my life, and was a tremendous influence as a kid. And I really didn't even know it. I mean, I was just a hungry kid sitting at the kitchen table with my brother and sister. We weren't allowed to cook with her. We were allowed to watch.
You could only watch? Wow.
You could smell. And you know what? Smelling, listening. There was a lot that we were absorbing, but it was not a participatory activity. But she was an amazing cook. Food was incredible. And I just developed this love of cooking. Started cooking as a teenager. Went to Italy. Lived in Italy in my early 20s. Did a tremendous amount of cooking from Italian cookbooks. And so she just instilled that love of food and cooking in me.
And so would it be fair to say that your experience with your grandmother informs your cooking and your book and your career?
Yeah. I mean, I think, well, that's early memories, especially food memories, are incredibly powerful.
They are.
And they really shape who you are. I mean, I can still make my grandmother, she's no longer with us, she would be 108, 109.
It's possible. She's got enough vowels in her last name.
She got to 99. You know, whatever she was eating was working.
Yeah.
You know, those dishes, whenever I make them, it's like I'm back in her kitchen in the 1960s or 1970s, and I'm a kid sitting around waiting for, something to eat. And there was always something amazing to eat.
So what is it about Italian food, or at least Italian-American food, that makes us feel so comfortable, so happy?
Well, the interesting thing is the food that I grew up with and that most Italian Americans grew up with really has no direct analog in Italy. It's very different. I mean, that was always the shock for me when I got to Italy, was like, well, this is not at all the food of my people. Mm-hmm. It seems related, but it's different. But what I think really got carried over by Italian immigrants, not only to the United States, but everywhere Italians went, was this just joy of life and recognition that food is a way to celebrate family and friendship, that it's something that you savor and that should be with company and wine. And that's
what we're missing.
Yeah. Well, and that, you know, that part of it was always a big part of it, that there was, you know, the table was always full, not only of dishes, but of people. Mm-hmm. There was always wine. At least my recollection that's what all of you adults were doing when I was a kid. And I think that is why Italy resonates, because that, you know, la dolce vita. I mean, it's a cliche, but often cliches are grounded in some sort of fact, and that Italians know how to live.
So then, thinking about that, how do you take all 20 regions, all of Italy, all of its culinary diversity, and boil it down to 100 recipes?
It was really challenging. The original list was 400. And so
doesn't
we said,
seem like enough there either.
No, that's not enough. But we said, so for each of the 20 administrative regions, and the book is organized north to south, mm-hmm. that we wanted to choose recipes that really felt distinct to that area. Because that's the really interesting thing about Italy, is that the food is really quite diverse. You've got the fact that Italy is a north to south country. Mm-hmm. So even though it's not a huge country, you have a very diverse set of climates and topography and geography, which influences all the cheese and the butter in the north, and all of the tomatoes and garlic and chili peppers in the south. So we're like, what are those dishes from the Piedmont, from Tuscany, from Calabria, that really feel like tell the story of the local ingredients, the local traditions? We also wanted to build a cookbook. So we didn't want 100 pasta recipes, as much as I love pasta. Felt like, well, we needed to have sweet things. We needed to have antipasti. We needed fish. And so, you know, it works that way. Mm-hmm. And it was just really fun. I mean, the cooking in the kitchen, a lot of these dishes, many people at America's Test Kitchen had never tasted before, because they're very much local dishes that haven't gotten to Boston.
Like
or,
what? Like name a few of them. I'm curious what those might be.
So a dish from Puglia that's made with dried fava beans and potatoes. So think about mashed potatoes meets hummus in some way. So
that sounds delightful.
And then, no, it gets better. Then you sauté escarole with a lot of garlic, and you put that on top. And so it's this creamy, beany, earthy, potato-y, warm, delicious. Oh, and there's a lot of olive oil, of course.
Do you scoop it? How do you eat it?
Yeah, it's a side dish.
Yeah,
you know, but it's like mashed potatoes and garlicky greens, but it's all one. And then there's dried fava beans, which is supplying its own flavor. And so that's like a dish I had actually had before. But I think I may have been the only person in the Test Kitchen who had ever had that dish, because it's a dish that really doesn't get that far out of Apulia.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad we're talking about food, because we did our requisite 8 NPR minutes of intellectual talk of Italy. So let's go to the food. I spent some quality time this week cooking, and there are pictures, by the way, of the recipes that we're about to talk about on our website. And I want to start with the chicken liver crostini. And you describe it in the book as a classic recipe from Tuscany, and it was a challenge for me. I love cooking. Full disclosure, I'm Italian American, Sicilian American, and so you know, I wanted to try something that wasn't from Sicily, and I've never cooked livers before. Can you just tell us a little bit about what goes into this recipe?
So it starts with chicken livers.
Yeah.
They're at your supermarket. You just need to look for them. They're usually in a container. They are lightly sautéed butter, sage. There's onion in there. Mm-hmm. There's white wine. It's not all that different than perhaps what you might get in a French recipe.
But it's chunky.
It's chunky. So once you sauté them, and the key here is to not overcook the chicken liver. You throw it in the food processor, and it's not a smooth, creamy puree. It's rustic. The thing about Tuscany is, you know, we think of Florence. If you want some. Thank you. You know, I just have to say that, like, as the food person, generally when I go radio, television, I'm the person who has to cook.
Yeah.
Well, you know, that's generally the way this works. And so I'm, thank you. You cooked for me.
Well, I'm Italian American. You can't come to my table and I can't have you come here with no food on the table. I should have brought wine. You're right, though.
It's, you know, it's Friday afternoon.
It's true. We got some time for the wine.
So
I made this last night.
Yeah. So Tuscany is a place of frugality. It wasn't actually, yes, I mean, the Renaissance and all the wealth that seems to be implied by all the, you know, the gold and the that's there was the high point. And, you know, 19th century Tuscany was a very poor place. And so the rest of Tuscans are known as bean eaters, which is like a derogatory that other Italians use about Tuscans because they were so poor they had to eat beans all the time. So that also meant things like, okay, how do we, you know, turn the chicken livers? You know, we're not only going to roast the chicken or braise the chicken, but we're going to do something with the offal.
Yeah.
And those liver are not going to waste. So I'm going to taste.
Okay.
And give you the honest opinion.
All right. Be kind. Again, I made it last night. Post a holiday party.
The fact that you're cooking after your holiday party, I mean, I'm worried you didn't have enough fun at the holiday party.
No, I did. I had fun. And you know what? It was like, I was done. So it was a good excuse to get home.
It's delicious.
Yeah, and I had fun making it. It didn't take very long. And that's what I mean, it was simple ingredients and it was fun to make. So thank you for bringing it to me as an idea.
And I would say excellent execution.
Great. Well, thank you. Well, let's see how you feel about the next thing. So I also went further north to Piemonte for a chocolate hazelnut cake that's also here in the book. And, well, first, I mean, I was expecting Nutella to be an ingredient, but it wasn't.
So this is the Piedmont in the Northwest, is where Nutella comes from, mm-hmm. the spread that is made with hazelnuts, a local ingredient, and chocolate, which, of course, they're not – chocolate doesn't grow in the Piedmont, but they are manufacturing it. It is a center of Italian candy making. And so, you know, we're using the constituent ingredients. There are hazelnuts in this cake, and there is bittersweet chocolate rather than the Nutella. And it's it's a flourless cake mm-hmm. that we added a little bit of flour to for a better texture. It has 2 tablespoons of flour. But it is a cake that relies on egg foam. So many cakes, you're adding baking powder and or baking soda to get that leavening. This is an egg foam cake. So you're separating the whites from the yolks. You did it. You know what you did.
I did. And I've never done it before. So, you know.
Well, I have to say, I think you used a pan that was smaller than we suggested.
I did. So apartment living, I had an 8 and I had an 8 and a 10 inch pan, and you suggested 9.
Yeah. So you went smaller.
Yeah.
So it's taller. It's dusted with confectioner sugar.
Yeah, I was trying to cover up the top here, yeah. And we'll put a picture of this on the website so you could compare it to what it's supposed to look like.
Well, those cracks are not a mistake. There's fissures in the top of this cake because it's leavened, as I said, with the egg foam. So it rises and then it does collapse a little bit. Mm-hmm. And when it collapses, there's some fissures. I'm a little worried about some of the structural issues around the periphery of the cake.
Yeah. Well, okay. So I didn't fully understand what you were talking about with the parchment paper in the recipe, which, again, is on our website. But so I may have messed that up, and I apologize.
Oh, so we're going to need to do a parchment tutorial?
I guess. I'm used to making things like our third recipe here, which is caponata from Sicily. It took every fiber of my being to not just make my mother's caponata and bring it in. I actually did go and make some with her this week as well, just to have some. But I made your recipe and caponata. Can you just quickly explain what the idea behind caponata?
So it is the eggplant relish from either Calabria or Sicily. Mm-hmm. And since, you know, my relatives are from Calabria and yours are from Sicily, so we're not going to get into that.
Nope,
but it is
nope.
Sweet and sour.
Super cordial, yeah.
So as opposed to ratatouille, for instance, it's got bigger, bolder flavors, I think. It's got brown sugar, red wine vinegar, pine nuts, raisins, olives in it. What I think is interesting, and I want to hear your take, and I want to hear your mother's take on how we deal with the eggplant.
I could not believe I had to put the eggplant in the microwave. But I did it. I followed your instructions, involved coffee filters and microwaving with the eggplant.
Yeah, and so what we're doing here, and it's not the health thing. I mean, yes, you end up sautéing the eggplant in less oil. So what you're doing is you're salting the eggplant, spraying the coffee filters with vegetable oil, and then nuking it. But that's so you can taste everything else rather than the oil. So you can taste the olives and the capers and the delicious vinegar and sugar.
Well, in a mere seconds, we're going to get to try all of this. Jack Bishop, Chief Creative Officer of America's Test Kitchen, and together with National Geographic, they're out with a new cookbook, Tasting Italy, A Culinary Journey. It's beautiful. There are pictures and recipes on our website. Jack, thank you so much for coming in.
Thanks, Jamie.
That's Radio Boston for today and this week. I'm Jamie Bologna. Join us again on Monday for more Radio Boston.